Hello, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. I do apologise that it is a day late, so I appreciate your patience. In short, over the last 2 days, I have felt really physically and slightly mentally, but more physically, like, low. And as a naturally quite enthusiastic person, I really notice when I don't have energy, mental, physical energy. And as I always tell you guys, you've probably heard me say this before if you've listened to my Instagram stories or my TikToks or my podcasts, I always say that the worst thing you can do when you're feeling low, feeling less motivated or feeling frustrated or whatever the typical negative emotion might be, the worst thing you can do is then add frustration into the mix. So being frustrated that you're not as high energy as normal or feeling angry at yourself for not feeling a certain way. So I really try to lean into how I'm feeling. If I'm feeling sick, feeling ill in some way, I'll appreciate the time to pause and I'll do things that I wouldn't normally allow myself to do because, well, I can't really do much else if I'm lying in bed, right? But I think the reason for the low feeling in my body, I was not diagnosed, that sounds so severe, but I had a blood test probably like a year ago now, and I was told that I was significantly deficient in iron. So I started having iron tablets, had to take 2 really high dosage iron tablets a day. And I'm not the best with sticking to it, I'll be totally honest. And I realised that I hadn't been taking it consistently for a while, and I think that that might have been the reason that over the last couple of days I felt pretty low energy. So I've identified what the reasons are that I don't take my iron and my other tablets. I've put them in the kitchen, literally next to the oil that I use to make my breakfast every day, so that if I'm coming down to make a coffee or I'm coming to make my breakfast, they're all stacked up. I've taken them out of the boxes so it's even easier, and I'm going to order a pill box so that I can literally take them out of the pack and just open it. I have some like gummies, apple cider vinegar gummies and stuff like that, and they taste really nice. And so it's really easy to take them because you just take one out and you put it in your mouth and it's really good. But the thing with tablets is there's an extra element to it because you need a glass and then you need to fill the glass with water and then you have to take it out of the packet and then put it in your mouth. So I'm breaking it down. I've now put a glass next to the tablets. As soon as I get a pill box, I'm going to take all of the tablets out of the packaging so that the tablets are literally there, the glass is there. All I need to do is to turn around, fill it up with water and then put them in my mouth, and boom, I'm no longer going to be deficient in iron. So in terms of yesterday, I just really didn't feel like I had the physical energy or the enthusiasm to really do this podcast justice. So I thought, let's do it today. And today is such a beautiful day. The sun is out. I love it when the sun comes through the windows and like glistens on my plants and just makes them glow. It gives me so much joy. So yeah, if you're in the UK, it's Saturday today. Yesterday was kind of warm, but it was a bit cloudy. I don't think it was that sunny. But today, the sun is out. It really feels like a weekend, which makes sense because it is a weekend. So I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good, and let's get going. Today's podcast is a Q&A. If you don't hear that I'm doing a Q&A, it's because I post asking for the questions over on my Instagram. If you're not following me, it's izzie.miller_izzie.miller. I'll also pop the link in the show notes below. So make sure you go over and follow me there. I'm always popping up videos of my cold plunges, of little tips and tricks as to how you can feel the best that you can more of the time, which is never a bad thing. So let's crack on with the questions. Question one, and it's quite a long one. Someone discovered me on YouTube through one of my YouTube shorts, and the YouTube short that had actually been taken from a previous podcast was all about how to stop having regrets. And the reason why it was such a powerful podcast was because regrets were something that I used to have bucket loads of. I couldn't even scroll through my photo album on my phone without feeling a pang of shame or embarrassment or regret when I saw certain videos or photos of like my university years. Even though I'd never really done anything wrong, I was overwhelmed with regret and shame about my past. And it really took me a while to overcome that and to realize why I felt so bad. And so this podcast really goes into it. I'll maybe try and find it and pop that link in the description box. But equally, if you just flick back through all of the episodes, it'll be something titled something around regret. And I'd highly recommend giving that a listen if it is something that you struggle with. So this guy's question: how do I get over the guilt of me wanting to self-improve myself when I know that my former friend is still grieving? I feel bad working on myself, knowing that they aren't working on their self, but instead putting their energy to hating me. I don't blame them for being upset. I just want to know how to feel okay about working on myself and wanting to help others when they aren't doing that. Part of me feels like if they're still angry at me, then I'm not allowed to let myself grow. So I think there's a few elements here. First of all, we've got the guilt of improving themselves, knowing that someone else isn't feeling so great. We've got another part of it where this person knows that someone else is actively not liking them. And we've got the element of not feeling like they can move on and let themselves grow whilst this person is still in their lives and giving out negative energy towards them. So put simply, my first thought when I read this is, you are not in control of anybody else. And you are also not responsible for anybody else. Yes, if you have a child, then you are responsible for them. They are helpless. They can't do anything. You are their guardian. You have to look after them. But other than that, other than taking care of a young child, you are not responsible for how anybody else feels. And if you are looking to improve yourself and make yourself better and they can't understand that, then there is no way that you can get them to understand it either. When I started really diving in and immersing myself into this self-development, self-love, self-empowerment work, there are a lot of people that didn't get the new headspace that I was in. And to start with, I would try and explain it to them. Or if they came to me with something really negative, I would try and point them to a more positive perspective. But after a while, I realized that if people don't want to change, or they're not ready to change, or they don't understand the change necessary, then nothing you say is going to work. A really great metaphor that I heard that just paints this so clearly is by Abraham Hicks. And it's essentially, if you know, when you were at school and maybe in science, I know we did this, but you would make circuits like with a battery, and then you'd have a little light on the end of it and you'd like connect it all up and work out why the light wasn't going on or how to make the light turn on. Well, essentially, if the light bulb isn't connected to the circuit, AKA the person's brain isn't connected to your way of thinking, or even open to your way of thinking, then your circuit is never going to be able to turn their light on. And that is such a powerful thing to understand, because you cannot control anyone else. You can only control yourself. And also, another great thing to remember is that the best way to convince anybody of anything is to stop telling them, to stop screaming down their throats, and actually just show them through your actions, through how happy you are, that what you're doing is working. And if they want your results, then they can come and do what you're doing. And if they don't want your results, or they don't believe something about your results, then they don't have to. But that is not your choice. That is theirs. I had a friend at uni who was vegan, like a really passionate vegan. And I remember sitting with her before one of our lectures, and she was telling me all about how horrible it is and how bad it is eating meat. And I listened and I was hearing what she was saying, but it wasn't going in. None of it was convincing me of anything. I wasn't anti it. I just remember feeling totally neutral towards it, kind of knowing that I would never be vegan. And then cut to the pandemic, like 3 or 4 years later, and I turned vegan and have been ever since then. But it wasn't through anybody shouting down my throat. It wasn't through anybody convincing me of anything. I came to that decision through reading a book that actually had nothing to do with eating meat, nothing to do with animal products. It didn't even mention any of that. But for some reason, something clicked in my brain. The circuit turned the light on in my brain that said, this makes sense. This is what I need to do. And so it just happened really easily. And my understanding of this is also the reason why I never ever tried to convince anybody to be vegan or even vegetarian, because I know that we've all been wired throughout our entire life to believe that eating meat is normal. And when I walk down the street and smell some crispy duck or some roast chicken, or and I think my first thought is, oh my God, that smells amazing. But then because I have been in a new way of thinking for quite a few years now, my brain then understands exactly what it is that I'm smelling, and I can see the other perspective. But for a lot of people, they've never been introduced clearly to that other perspective. So being vegetarian or vegan wouldn't be something that they understand or could even dream of doing. And I clearly remember saying that I would never be vegetarian or vegan, that I just couldn't do it. But truth is that I could, but it had to happen in my timing. So I know that your question was about finding the self-empowerment to go on this journey without the blessing or company of your friend, but using this vegetarian-vegan comparison, I hope it's starting to help you understand why trying to convince them to do anything or to join you or even to feel bad about the fact that they're not is a pointless thing to do. And just to comment on the last part of the question, which was, part of me feels like if they're still angry at me, that I'm not allowed to let myself grow. The person isn't angry at you. I don't know what's happened between you two, but they are not angry at you. They are more than likely angry at themselves. All the emotion that we express is almost always the result of what we've been storing inside. And I'm going to get up another good metaphor, because she loves a metaphor. Now, I've heard a different version of this analogy, but this literally popped up on my Facebook, I think yesterday, and I just thought it was brilliant. So it goes like this. You are holding a cup of coffee when someone comes along and bumps into you or shakes your arm, which makes you spill your coffee everywhere. Why did you spill the coffee? Because someone bumped into me. Wrong answer. You spilled the coffee because there was coffee in your cup. Had there been tea in the cup, you would have spilled tea. Whatever is inside the cup is what will spill out. Therefore, when life comes along and shakes you, which will happen, whatever it is inside you will come out. It's easy to fake it until you get rattled. So we have to ask ourselves, what's in my cup? When life gets tough, what spills over? Joy, gratitude, peace, and humility? Or anger, bitterness, victim mentality, and quitting tendencies? Life provides the cup. You choose how to fill it. I hope you love that analogy just as much as I do. I think that's brilliant. And whilst it's helpful for us to understand ourselves and become self-aware of what we're like in life situations that push us over the edge, it's also really helpful to create peace with how we're seeing other people and how we're letting other people affect us. It's not up to you what's in their cup. What's up to you is how you respond when their cup spills over. So I'm going to move on to this person's second question. So they said, my other question is, how can I get over the anxiety of worrying that this person that he mentioned previously is going to reach out and say something mean to me, along with the fear that they are going to expose some of my deepest secrets that they know about? I know there is a low chance that happening, but the anxiety chimp in my mind is thinking that. It absolutely makes sense that someone who knows personal things about you and isn't being your friend at this moment might release some of those secrets. You know, that makes perfect sense why you would be worried about that. So first of all, acknowledge that it makes sense. Acknowledge that that fear inside of you is a legitimate fear. Why? Because we have a deep-rooted desire to be safe, to be seen as enough, to be loved. And if this secret that you have that you're worried about coming out would jeopardize your feeling of safety or your sense of being loved or the feeling that you're good enough, then of course the chimp in the back of your mind is going to feel anxious. So acknowledge that, realize that. But again, we come back to this recognition of what are you in control of and what are you not in control of? And I think based off all of your questions and the things that you've shared with me, the biggest thing that you need to do in order to drastically progress in your self-development journey is understanding the difference between what you can control and what you can't, and only allowing the things that you can control to impact how you feel and releasing emotional connection to the things that don't. Obviously, they are going to have an impact on you if they're quite significant, like this that you've mentioned, but it's coming back to, What can I control? And if they were to share something personal about me, then can I think about what's the worst case scenario? What's the worst case scenario of them sharing this secret? Because if I can come to terms with the fact that this worst case scenario might happen, I stop letting the worst case scenario in this person have control over me. I'm in control because I have put my mind on the worst case scenario and I've said, bring it on. I'm fine with that. Yeah, it's not great and I'd prefer that not to happen, but there are always pros to cons and there are always cons to pros. You can find positives in the challenging outcomes. The answer to this question is simply that you achieve release of that anxiety by simply knowing that you are strong enough to deal with anything that comes your way, whether they reach out and say something mean, whether they share your secrets. You are good enough, strong enough, and deserving of love regardless of what they do or say. And if they're not making you feel that way, then it's even more proof that they are better out of your life than in. So I really hope, Jake, that that has helped. And we will get on to the next question, which is also about regret. So this question was from Beck, who said, how do you make decisions without regret? Again, as someone who used to be plagued with regret and is or has been and also kind of still is not the best decision maker. I get it from my mum. I can completely relate to this question. Put simply, you are never, ever going to know what the result is going to be. So when you're making a decision about something, you don't know which path is going to lead to the best result or which path is going to lead to which result. You have no idea. So the only thing that you can do, the best thing that you can do, is to make peace with your decision and the reason why you're making it right now. So before you make it, as you make it, and after you make it, you are making peace with that decision. So maybe you don't have a really good reason as to why you're going for that decision, but your reason for making the decision is because not making it was screwing you up inside and there were no signs as to which was the right or wrong decision. So you simply took one to allow yourself to move forward and to feel better. Why is this so important? Well, if you can make peace with the decision and your reason why, then you don't give yourself any space to feel regret later because you can remember, you can clearly remember the conversation you had with yourself where you were feeling stuck, feeling confused, feeling lack of mental clarity about what decision to make. And then you sat down with yourself, you had a conversation and said, right, we need to make a decision. We're going to feel better when we make the decision. And whatever decision we make, we're going to back ourselves. We're going to stick to this decision and we are not going to allow ourselves to regret the decision because we were simply doing our best in this moment. And then later on, when you look back at that decision, even if it all turned out horribly and whatever it was that you decided to do, you had a terrible time. Well, who knows? Usually the things that are the most challenging for us lead to great outcomes. The breakup leads to the breakthrough. The redundancy leads to your dream job or to you creating your own business. The bullying when you were a kid leads to you being really passionate about helping people in the future. So either way, it's a win-win because if the decision goes badly, you're going to learn from it and become stronger and have memories and stories to tell. And if the decision goes great, well, it's gone great. So either way, it's a positive. Plus, usually with decisions, you can always change your mind down the line, or you can always do multiple things. So just because you're making one decision now doesn't mean you can't make another decision at another time. So those are my thoughts with that question. Okay, next question. So this is from a lovely girl called Eloise. I think she is currently in sixth form. So she's asked, I know you went to sixth form. What is one tip you would give to someone in year 12 or year 13? Now, this is a question that, once again, I very much connect with because my sixth form experience was one of the most challenging times of my life. Between the ages of year 3 and year 11, I went to an all-girls private school. I know, very, very lucky. After year 11, I had to find a sixth form because my school didn't have a sixth form and I don't think my parents could really afford to send me to private school for that long. Now, at the time, I was really into dance and there are not many sixth forms that offer dance as an A-level. And so there was one sixth form that was about half an hour away. So I probably could have gone to it, but it was a bit of a silly idea. We wanted one that was a bit closer. So the only other place that did, that offered dance, was a place called Stantonbury Campus. Now, Stantonbury Campus used to allow kids to just wear whatever clothes they wanted to wear to the school. They called the teachers by their first name. And whilst that sounds amazing and it sounds very relaxed, the school was threatened by Ofsted that it would be shut down because it was so off the rails. So they got, I think they got in a new head teacher and they made a lot of changes. So for starters, they put a massive fence around the campus. Before that, it'd just been open, so kids would just come in and out as they chose. Whereas a fence was put around it, quite secure. All kids had to wear school uniform and of course call the teachers by their full name. So the school had improved slightly by the time I arrived there, but it was still pretty darn rough. Most people in the sixth form knew each other, so I was very much a newbie. Coming from an all-girls private school to a quite rough mixed-gendered sixth form was interesting. I'm really, really glad that I had that experience because it prepared me for university. I'd never really been around guys until that point, so it was really, really useful in preparing me. I wouldn't have wanted to go to an all-female sixth form, to be honest. I don't think it would have been good for my self-development. Anyway, most of the people in the sixth form just didn't like each other. I think we were the only year to not have a ball at the end of sixth form because no one wanted to be there. There weren't really many friendship groups, and the friendship groups there were kind of just people hanging around each other because they didn't really know what else to do. So I was in with a group. They weren't necessarily a bad group, but I think a few of them were quite into drugs, and maybe one or two of them were actually a little bit further down that line. So it wasn't awful, but it also wasn't amazing. But that wasn't the main problem. The main challenge was that I had left GCSEs with the understanding that sixth form was going to kind of be a walk in the park. There would be smaller groups, you'd be studying what you really wanted to study, you didn't have to do the subjects that you hated. But what they didn't tell us was how challenging the workload was. I had gone from getting quite high grades at GCSE, and I am not a naturally clever individual. I'm not dumb either. I was just kind of average, but I'd done quite well with my GCSEs because I worked really hard. And then I entered sixth form and I was getting really low grades. I was so far behind in some of the subjects, for instance, history. The areas that they were doing for A-level was modern political history, and I'd never done politics, but they all had. So I had no idea about anything. I was starting at the absolute ground. But the main thing was I didn't understand why we were doing it. My year was the year I think everyone had to go into further education, whether that was an apprenticeship or sixth form, we had to. So everybody was there because they had to be there, not because they wanted to be there. And except for the odd people who knew exactly what they wanted to do in their life, I had no idea, and most of us didn't. So we were working ridiculously hard with really challenging work with no understanding of why we were doing it. And so essentially, because of being around brand new people who were very, very judgy and not really the nicest, I developed panic attacks quite quickly after being there. I had never, ever had panic attacks before. And then all of a sudden, I was in this brand new environment where I was allowed to wear whatever I wanted to wear because it was sixth form, so we were. I was being judged on what I was wearing. People would just say whatever they thought. And so I was coming into sixth form always anxious. Secondly, once again, because of doing this insane workload with no understanding of where I was headed, I started to develop depression as well. And I remember clearly walking around with what felt like a veil over my eyes. It was, if you've ever experienced depression, you'll know what I'm talking about. But if you don't, then it's really hard to explain what it's like. But it was like having, I guess, like contact lenses. I've never had contact lenses, but I'm imagining what it would be like in my eyes. But they had like, they were a bit blurred. And so I felt completely distant from life. I felt I was just floating around with just the question in my head of what's the point? And so there I was, this previously enthusiastic, bubbly human who was now plagued with panic attacks and depression because I was surrounded by negative people and no sense of purpose. And this is all quite relevant now because my sister is actually in year 11 and she's really struggling. I've got a neighbour who has a daughter who I believe is in year 9, and I've been taking her to school every morning. And she's really, really struggling because she doesn't see the point. The people at her school are really, really nasty. She's quite slim and apparently they judge her a lot for that. And so secondary school and sixth form is such a tough time. You're developing physically in ways that you're not used to. You're around people who are equally as confused. So I know that I am now droning on about the challenges rather than giving a tip, but I wanted to share this so that any of you who are going through a similar phase, whether that is secondary school or sixth form, or you're just feeling totally lost or overwhelmed at work or in whatever area of your life, I really hope what I'm about to say will help, because evidently I managed to find my way out of that depressive, anxious phase. And I actually did this with the help of my mum. So my mum had an app called Calm, which is a meditation app. It's pretty much got calm music. And then this woman who I just think has the loveliest voice who does these meditations. I'm not someone who will meditate in silence. I like the guided meditations and they're only about 10 minutes long. There are even shorter ones as well. So there were two or three things I did to get out of this phase. Firstly, I applied for counselling, and I'll be completely honest, it pretty much did nothing. Counselling is somebody who listens to what you're experiencing and says that they understand, basically. But in my experience of counselling, I was never given strategies for getting out of where I was or improving how I felt, which is partly why I do what I do now and run the retreats that I run. Because a lot of people come to me for these retreats who say that they've been in therapy for years and it hasn't helped. It's helped them to understand why they feel the way they do and understand what they've gone through, but it doesn't help them change how they're feeling. And that's all they want. So I'm not slagging it off by any means. And it probably was helpful to speak to somebody who was in no connection to my family or my life. So on a minor scale, it probably was helpful. But was it the main thing that got me out of that? Absolutely not. The main two things were, as soon as I learned to drive, which would probably have been in year 13, to be honest, because my birthday's in June. Yeah, it would have been year 13. So I came back in year 13. I started trying to surround myself with people that were a bit nicer. And when I couldn't, I would drive in the morning and get to sixth form about 10, 15, 20 minutes earlier than I needed to. And I would park at the back of the car park, like under a tree. And I would just put on the calm and meditate for 10 minutes. Now, to remove the word meditate and put it really simply, what I did was I closed my eyes and I just practiced observing my thoughts. I practiced becoming calm before I went into my day. So it wasn't that I was a perfect meditator. I just gave myself 10 minutes to calm my mind, relax, become self-aware before I went into sixth form. And then as soon as I was in, during breaks and lunch, I realized that being around these people wasn't doing me any good. It was just making me more anxious and making me question myself even more. So I decided that the best way to avoid those people and to also tackle the really intense workload was to just put myself in a room or with other people who were studying and study to do my work, put my head down and do as much as I could. I also found myself becoming quite interested in makeup and I would watch YouTube videos. I'd never really been interested in makeup. I didn't really have much makeup, but because of the focus on my appearance from these people at sixth form, I started to become more aware of what I looked like, and I was also trying to procrastinate from doing work. So I would watch these YouTube videos and try and learn different techniques and things like that. And then it got to a point where I realized, I'm not happy. This isn't helping me. I can do this after I finish sixth form if I really want to. So I started just going into sixth form with no makeup on. No makeup on, doing work in breaks and lunches. And you would think that that kind of behavior, where you're essentially a recluse and you're not really looking your best, is going to lead to depression. But actually, that was my way out of it. And the last thing I did that, again, was probably one of the most important, most powerful mindset shifts that I made during this time was something that my mum said. My mum, she said that right now you're kind of in this tunnel, this pitch black tunnel that feels there is no end. And you have no desire to get to the end because you don't even know what's at the end. It feels really tough. But all you need to do to get out of this tunnel and to feel better is keep on going. And what I learned in hindsight of this was depression is simply lack of purpose. Depression is asking the question, so what? And when you're asking so what, it's because you don't have enough meaning in your life. And that is why so many secondary school students and sixth form students are getting depressed. It's because they're being told off for the slightest thing. Self-expression is being suppressed. They're around other people with mental health issues. They're being trained to complete exam papers, not to actually live life. And so there's this real lack of meaning and purpose in these young people. And Eloise, you might be feeling that yourself. I don't know. I don't know what kind of a tip you're wanting. So all I can give is my experience of sixth form and how I got out of it. So I decided that the light at the end of the tunnel was going to be getting into university. I didn't know what I wanted to study. I didn't know what I wanted to do in the future. And I didn't know what university I wanted to go to. So you could think, well, how can you create anything meaningful if you don't have the answer to these questions? And that was it. I found something so small, so vague and so basic that my brain could understand. My brain could cling on to something. And when I went to study English at Loughborough University, I still didn't know what I wanted to do in the future. All I knew was that I enjoyed English and I was naturally good at it. So that was the best option at the time. And the reason why I picked Loughborough University was because when I visited the campus, it seemed really inspiring. And put simply, they were number one for student satisfaction. So I thought, I can study English anywhere. So even if my course is terrible, at least I'm going to be satisfied while I'm here. But I kid you not, just deciding that that was going to be the light at the end of the tunnel allowed me to see that sixth form really isn't that long, that I don't have to care about these people that are around me because at the end of the year, I never have to see them again. And I literally haven't. I think I went back once to see my friend. So if it is people that are causing you challenges at sixth form, then realize it is only 2 years. And you do not have to ever see them again after sixth form if you don't want to. Try and decide what your purpose for being at sixth form is. Is it to learn more about a subject you really enjoy? Is it to get into university? Is it to get that job in the future? Is it simply because you don't know what else to do? And so this makes the most amount of sense right now. Even if that is it, that at its most basic level makes sense and gives you some focus. You're there because right now you don't know what else to do. Sixth form is tough for many, many reasons, but if you have some kind of a purpose, you will get through it. My second choice university was Falmouth University in Cornwall. And when I visited it, first of all, I absolutely love Cornwall. It feels like home. I think one time I went to Cornwall and I actually cried. It was so weird. I'm not necessarily a spiritual person, but I felt like I'd been there in a past life. And I don't think I believe in past lives, but it felt that strong. It's so weird. Anyway, so when I went to visit the campus, I just fell in love with it. It was a rainy, windy day, and yet I loved it. I felt so at home. I really felt like I would be back. And I really wanted to go there. But the reason why I picked Loughborough first was I looked at the expected grades, and Falmouth University, the grades were so low. I think they were like 2 C's and a D. You could get in with 2 C's and a D. And I thought, I kind of want to aim a bit higher than that. So Loughborough was like 2 A's and a B, I think. I didn't get that, but I still got in. So I essentially just said to myself, well, both universities look and sound amazing. So if I put Loughborough at the top, if I don't get in, then I'm still going to be super happy with Falmouth. And it means that there was a reason why I didn't get into Loughborough. But the reason for sharing this is that there are universities that are amazing that have lower entry grades. So Falmouth, for instance, is such an arty, wholesome, holistic university. At least it was when I looked around it. I think, what's her name? Dawn French, the woman who was in Vicar of Dibley. She's like a comedian or something. She's literally, or she was, the vice chancellor, if I got that wrong, that she's the something there, which I just think is great. Like, you've got this hilarious woman who is the face of the university rather than some like crusty old political man. Do you know what I mean? So take the pressure off yourself, because the pressure is only going to make you anxious. It's only going to make you not enjoy that each day to day. Remember, it's such a short amount of time, even though it feels like it's never going to end. There is an end to it, and the end is so much brighter than what you're experiencing now. And please know, university is a walk in the park. Unless you're training to be a doctor or maybe an engineer, university is so easy compared to sixth form, right? It's obviously still work, and yeah, but compared to sixth form, it's so easy. Honestly, it's so much more enjoyable. There's so many more people to meet and so many more like-minded people. People are there because they want to be there, because they've chosen to be there, because they've paid to be there, not because they have to. So the future looks better than the present when you're at sixth form, okay? So I'm going to stop droning on. I think I've been talking about that for quite some time now. But I hope that has helped those of you who sent in the questions and those of you who've just listened. As you know, I have always struggled to be consistent with this podcast. And I realized recently, again, actually, my mum helped me to realize what I was struggling with the consistency, is I think of this podcast as I need to record an episode every single week. And that sounds pretty easy. You've got 7 days in the week. That's plenty of time to record a podcast, but it never really comes intuitively. It never really feels like the right time. Then I'm thinking, right, I got to think of a topic, and it feels forced. And it also feels never ending, because there's no end to it. It's just a podcast every single week. And she said, well, if you were to think of it as you're doing a podcast for 6 months or even a year, well, that would mean that you would need to record 52 podcasts, and you could do that. Or if it was 6 months, you would need to record 26 episodes. And that feels totally achievable. I would probably batch record a few of them, get myself in the headspace. I'd maybe even video it or hire out a studio to record them. But when you think of it as, oh, I've got to do it every single week consistently, that feels exhausting. It feels like there's no endpoint and no achievement. Whereas I'm quite a spontaneous person who likes to gain a sense of achievement, and I don't really get that with this podcast. So what I'm saying this for is, one, to let you into a struggle that I've been having recently and how I'm going about resolving it, and also to let you know that there may come a point in the near future where I'm not saying that this 100% will happen, but where I stop posting podcasts for maybe a month or two. And then when I come back, they'll be so much more consistent. I don't know if this is going to happen, but I kind of just want to feel more in control and more excited about this podcast than I currently do. I think it is ridiculous if I say that I can't do a podcast once a week and to find excuses not to do that. And I don't want to live my life with excuses, you know, even though it may just be in this area. If you make an excuse for yourself, or you don't follow through on something that you said you would do, then what you're saying is, I don't trust myself to commit to something. And I don't want to be that person. I want to be someone who sticks to their word. Because if someone else asks me to do something, I will do it. But if I say I'm going to do something, I can talk myself out of it, and I'm not letting anyone but myself down. But part of self-empowerment is not allowing yourself to let yourself down. Do you know what I mean? So I want to stop letting myself and you guys down with my lack of consistency with this podcast. And so that might mean that I take a pause from it to get my head in the right space and to do the prep work to really make sure that the episodes I'm putting out are the best that they can be, because that's what you guys deserve. So thank you so much for listening. It would mean the absolute world to me if you could click follow on this podcast. Or if you have a couple of seconds more, you can leave a review or rate out of 5 stars if you're on Spotify. It all really, really helps. I know it takes mere seconds and feels like it's not helping at all, but it really, really does. And all that's left to say is, I appreciate it.